got their old pieces calling in the bonds of love we meet for the world anew.
Welcome to Muffin Talk. And welcome to Muffin Talk. This is Muffin Talk brought to you by the initiative Titiponamu, Study and Joy. And today it is a cooperation with the Religious Diversity Center. Muffin Talk is a weekly radio program to which I invite guests to talk about their work and their passion for issues on community programs, social justice, faith and religions. For today's program, I have invited Linda Kay to a Zoom recording for a broadcast. Linda, a warm welcome and hi to my radio program. Linda Kay is a member of the Jewish community who lives in the North Hokianga, about 5 hours north of Auckland. She has been a Bnei Mitzvah teacher, and among many other qualifications, she is now she is a Jewish and interfaith spiritual director. And since 2017, she's the first woman in New Zealand to undertake training as a scribe of Jewish sacred texts. Linda, you have many qualifications, and I only picked out a few. For those of us who are not so familiar with Jewish terms, can you please let us know what a Bnei Mitzvah teacher is?
Well, you know, at a certain age, Jewish children become a bar or a bat mitzvah. And they're taught by people within the community in the curriculum that they need for a bar or bat mitzvah. And I, when I was living in Auckland, was a teacher for Beit Shalom, the Reform community, and I was one of a team that taught the students how to read Torah, and what they need to do.
Is that to become a full member of the community then?
Yes.
Yeah. And you are also the first woman in New Zealand who has been training as a scribe of Jewish sacred texts.
Yes.
This is very special, but I have to do a separate interview about it. But just for our information, What is a scribe of a Jewish sacred text? What is the special thing about it?
Well, gosh, where would I start? Torah scrolls and mezuzot, which are the little boxes, the contents of the little box that we put on the doorposts of Jewish houses, and also tefillin, which are the Greek word is phylacteries that are bound on people's heads and arms when they're praying, are all scribed by hand, usually using feather quills on a special kosher parchment, and kosher ink, and according to very strict rules. I don't scribe tefillin, and I haven't completed a Torah scroll, but what I do scribe are mezuzot, which is the verses that go into the little box that goes on the door of Jewish houses.
And I'm sure that you can tell us a little bit more in another interview, because this is such a vast topic about the writing and the traditions of the writing in the Jewish tradition. And it's a long training. How long is the training normally for the majority of
people? Really stop.
You never stop.
I don't think you ever really stop. There are certain transitions that you go through. You know, there's a certain point where your teacher will say, this is good enough, you know, to be able to join this profession. It's almost like a guild, really. and there are all kinds of requirements. But yeah, you never stop training, I don't think.
Thank you very much, Linda. We'll talk about that in another interview. For those of you who've just tuned in, you are listening to Muffin Talk with Beate. If you miss any of our programs, please check out the website www.studyjoy.nz. And for this particular interview, also www.rdz.org.nz, the website of the Religious Diversity Center. My guest today is Linda Kay, and she is a member of the Jewish community. And last week, I interviewed Father Kevin Toomey, a Catholic priest, a Christian, on the topic of Easter. He mentioned that Christians have 40 days of fasting before Easter starts, and then there are 49 days before the Feast of Pentecost, which is celebrated on the 50th day. Therefore, it is called Pentecost. And the Jewish traditions, that you also have fasting, Pesach and Shavuot, almost at the same time of the year. Linda, can you tell us more about your faith traditions in this respect?
Well, I have to begin by saying I'm not a rabbi, so I'm only speaking to you from kind of inside my experience of the traditions. I'm not authoritative. I wouldn't want you to think I was. From the period of the 49 days is called the counting of the Omer. The Omer was, it was one of the harvests that was brought at the end of 7 weeks from Passover. So there are three pilgrimage festivals when all the Jewish community were required to go to Jerusalem, and it was a huge, they went to the temple with their various offerings. And it's interesting because the word chag is related in language to the word hajj, which is also the Muslim pilgrimage. So
the Jewish pilgrimage is chag?
Well, the word for the festival is a chag.
Okay.
You have chag a Pesach and chag Shavuot. Okay. So it's only found that out recently, although it's sort of obvious when you realize it must have been one of those things that you just overlooked. So yeah. The period of 7 weeks between, you know, the number seven is so sacred in so many ways that you could, books and books and books have been written about it. But the tradition, it's written in the Torah that you count 7 weeks between the pilgrimage into Jerusalem on Pesach and the Feast of Weeks. And the tradition is that each of the weeks is represented by or is given to the focus on a certain quality that is a divine quality that we hope we can draw down to the material world by focusing on that quality for a week at a time. And each of the seven qualities, it's like a hologram. So I don't know how.
So you have the three pilgrimages and then you always have 7 weeks in between.
Always 7 weeks in between. And each week, as I say, has a theme, and then each day has a theme within the theme of the week. So it's very hard to translate the concepts into English, but the first week is a focus on what is called chesed, which translates perhaps best as loving kindness. And then the second week is with a focus on what is called Gevura, which is discipline, I guess. And these are all
virtues.
their virtues and their qualities that are on the tree of life, on the Etz Chaim that a lot of people know about.
What is the tree of life?
The tree of life is a concept that also goes across more than one culture. But in the Jewish tradition, it's a tree that sometimes it's described as having its roots in heaven and its branches on the earth, but it's a very mystical concept and it's quite hard to explain. But the qualities are drawn down to the from the roots to the earth where we live. And so the first one, as I say, is chesed, which is also called loving kindness. And the second is discipline or restraint. And sometimes that's explained as being if you had complete unrestrained loving kindness, there would be no, it would be too brilliant, too radiant for ordinary humans to be able to experience it. So it has to be restrained.
Okay.
In order for us to be able to receive it. Because if we could receive the full divine light, we wouldn't need to be human.
We'd be
divine just to start with, you know. There would be no work for us to do and we wouldn't need to live in this dual world.
It could also, couldn't it be also interpreted that you have this loving kindness but it has some boundaries?
Yes, absolutely.
Where it then touches somebody else, you can be very compassionate and kind to a person. But if that kindness then has a damage to another person, then you have exceeded your boundary.
Yes, so it's exactly how it is. So it's as it were, you have to have mercy on the one hand and justice on the other. Mm-hmm. And then they are channeled, everything, it's all channeled and you can see it represented visually in various texts. But then there is what is called Tiferet, which is where compassion. Yes. Mm-hmm. So although it's sometimes called beauty, but it's the beauty of compassion, so that the loving kindness and the discipline join together. And then so that's the third week. The fourth week is what is called Netzach, which is like endurance, it's sometimes called, a sort of
Is it something that you don't give up? Is it also that?
Yeah, but it's also, it's related
perseverance?
Yes, it is related to that kind of discipline as opposed to restraint. It's the capacity to keep going, as mm-hmm. it were. And then the next week focuses on what's called Hod, which is a gratitude, I suppose, for want of a better way of describing it. And then the week after that is focused on Yisod, which is the foundation of and the bonding of bringing all those qualities together. And then finally, the quality called Malchut, which is the place where the spirit enters to rest on humankind. And within each of those qualities one day of the week. The first, so the first week is chesed, but the first day is chesed of chesed, and the second is gevura of chesed, and so on. And so every week you're focusing on one overarching quality, but then also on all the others in the context of that. I don't know if that's too obscure.
And that is something that happens between these two feast days,
between the two Pesach
and Shavuot.
Yeah, and not everybody observes it. I mean, it's like any other religious thing. I'm only, as I say, talking about my experience of this.
And when do you fast in that time, or do you fast before Pesach? When is your fasting?
No, there's not really any fasting. It's not like Ramadan in that respect. The first, before Pesach, the firstborn sons in a family, it's traditional for them to fast because the... As I understand it, I don't know if I'm theologically correct on this, because the firstborn of Egypt were all killed, and so the firstborn in a family, in Jewish families, are expected to fast the day before Passover.
Yeah, because in the Christianity we also say that the angel of revenge passed over these houses where... And it's spared their firstborn who would have been killed otherwise.
Yeah, I have never heard the. I have to say, I've never heard the angel described as the angel of revenge.
Well, that's what I heard.
Oh, wow!
Oh, yeah. Well, that, maybe that's scary. Another topic, but it's it's about this passing over, and that's why we learned that the lintels of the houses had to be. Painted with the blood of a lamb or a
a
certain age.
Yes.
And because that's how the angel passed over these houses.
Yes.
And it was the firstborn who would have been in danger.
Yes, yes. And it was the firstborn in Egypt who died, yes. Yeah.
So you have your fasting before the Pesach fast.
Yes, but it's not a universal. It's just the firstborn who fast. And it's I think it's just one day. So I don't know much about
and what
that
about
because I'm not the firstborn. So I've never had to observe that. So
what about the tradition that I've heard that some people go with a feather and clean regarding when you can't have living bread?
That's before Passover as well. That is what we do during Passover. We eat no leavened products. So we don't eat, there are certain grains that you don't eat. Wheat, oats, barley, spelt and rye, as far as I know. But you clean your house of all of those products and... then there's a tradition that the night before Passover, you go through the house and with a light and a feather we used to have a little dustpan, but I guess a piece of paper and you sweep up any crumbs that are left. And then the next morning you burn them and you make a declaration that if there's anything you've missed, you ask that it be treated as not being there anymore.
Not intention.
Yes, as being null and void because the Torah says that, you know, you're not to have any leaven in your houses for those 7 days. Mm. And the spiritual meaning of it is generally understood to be that, you know, leavened bread is puffed up and we're aiming for a degree of humility. Mm. And because in the Northern Hemisphere that period between Pesach and Shavuot is the onset of summer, because Pesach is springtime there, and it's sometimes described as the festival of spring. because in the Northern Hemisphere, it's that time of year. It's the time when people would have had not a lot of food, and they would have been just, the crops would have been just starting to grow again. And so
I was wondering, wasn't there also something because the with the flight to Egypt, from flight from Egypt, that the people had no time to wait for the leaven to develop? Is that
yes, that's the explanation that's given to why we eat matzah, which is the unleavened bread, and that it says in the Torah that the people didn't have time for the bread to rise, and so they left in haste.
Mm-hmm.
They left in haste, and the tradition is that they didn't have time to rise the bread. Yeah.
So now you say that this is 7 days before Pesach, right?
This is during Pesach.
This is during Pesach.
During Pesach, you don't eat leavened bread.
Okay.
Oh, the clearing out of the chametz you do with the feather and the
light.
The light you do the night before Pesach.
Okay.
It's the night before. Yeah.
And then you have Pesach, how long is Pesach?
Pesach is 8 days in the diaspora, 7 days in Israel. Yeah.
And then you have the time between Pesach and Shavuot, and have also
from the second night of Pesach you count your 7 weeks, yeah.
Ah, okay. And what is Shavuot? What celebration is Shavuot then?
Shavuot is the feast of weeks. I mean, the word Sheva is seven, so it's just the culmination of the.
It's like
the Pentecost means 50, doesn't it?
Yes.
Shavuot means seven times seven. So yeah, and that festival was the festival of the first fruits becoming ripe in the Middle East. So people would take their fruits for offerings.
Yeah.
You see, and there would be another great pilgrimage. And
how is it celebrated today? How would you celebrate it? You are in Hokianga. Oh, you don't even have a synagogue in the area.
Often I go to Auckland for these festivals, although this year I did celebrate Passover up here. But traditionally, Shavuot is when the Torah was given to Israel. So it's multiple layers. And so it is, there's a tradition that's especially been revived in recent years of keeping watch on the night before the Torah is given. And so young people stay up all night. Some people just stay up till midnight. But the tradition is to stay awake so for the revelation.
Yeah.
And to study sacred texts. And there has been a tradition to study from the Torah and from the commentaries on the Torah as well. So you kind of try to cover everything in some way or other. So nowadays in many synagogues, I think it is more just that you study, the community comes together.
Yeah.
Studies. And it's also traditional to eat dairy foods on Shavuot. And there are lots of different explanations for that tradition, but one that I remember from my childhood was that because the Torah hadn't yet been given, we didn't have yet the rules about what animals were kosher and all of those things. So just to be on the safe side, you don't eat any animals.
But you can eat anything that is made of milk.
Yes, you eat dairy food. So that's one explanation. There must be lots, but I didn't
Oh my God. And how is it living in as a Jewess in Hokianga, so far away from the next synagogue? And are there other Jews in your area? Can you?
My neighbors are Jewish.
Oh, your neighbors are Jewish. Oh, that's good. You don't have to go far.
There are lots of Jewish people up here, but we are, of course, more scattered. And but I managed to. I have a friend who comes every Shabbos to study Torah together, and it's not like being near a synagogue. It's not at all. And so I modify.
But as you said, that you, when you have a big feast day, then you come to Auckland.
Usually I do. Sometimes I don't. But and we have the, you know, the wonderful Zoom. So I managed to study several times a week with people from all over the world, really, because.
Yeah, there are no boundaries then for this.
There are no boundaries except, you know, the wonderful boundaries of living in this beautiful country, because you know, one of the women I study with twice a week is a rabbi in Sao Paulo, Brazil. So
it's different situation there at the moment.
Very, very
Linda, sweet. Thank you so much for this interview, and as I said, we'll have to do an interview especially on the scriptures, on the texts one day. Thank you very much. To our listeners, on Saturday, we have one session. On Saturday, the 29th of May, from 7 to 9 p.m., Titi Ponamu Study and Joy is organizing an evening together with St. Mark's Coptic Orthodox Church in Birkdale, Auckland's North Shore. And the evening will include a presentation by Nick Bird on rock-hewn churches in Ethiopia. And a site visit, of course, to the beautiful Coptic Orthodox Church that we have in Auckland. You will find more events on the website for sessions organized by Titi Ponamu Study and Joy at www.studyjoy.nz, and events organized by the Religious Diversity Center you can find at www.rdc.org.nz. Thank you so much, Linda, for this insight, and greetings to Hokianga.
Thank you. And I know you're not here.
Yes, I love that region. Yeah, kia kaha, you speak Māori, kia kaha, and keep safe wherever you are. And thank you very much, Linda.
Thank you.
Out there, oh, peace is calling in the bonds of love we meet for the world a new day dawning and shining. Peace out.